Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, August 20th, 2016. This is episode 1315. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/techguy. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and all that jazz. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. I'm here to do it with you. Kind of a computer, well, used to call it a computer user group of the airwaves. Now I think it's more like a technology user group of the airwaves, right? Anything with a chip in it. 888-827-5536. Heather Hammon is here to answer your phone calls, the phone ranger. Website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. I know that you probably were all hearing the story about some hacker group. Actually, I think it was a well-known security research group. Hacking or somehow getting NSA exploits that could be used to target Cisco firewall systems. And there was some question about the whole thing. First of all, I guess the question is, are these real code examples from the NSA's own archives? And if so, I mean, did they hack the NSA? The hacking group that did this, the shadow brokers, are asking for 1 million bitcoins. I imagine them with a little pinky to their 1 million bitcoins, which is currently at current bitcoin value, it's about $600 million. To in an auction for the stuff that they haven't released, the quote best cyber weapons. So it raises a lot of questions. A, are these legit? Are these real or is this just a good forgery? What's the story there? And B, how do they get them? If it is real, how do they get them? And C, how dangerous are they? Okay? So A, it seems to be they are in fact real, and that's because The Intercept, which has the trove of Edward Snowden leaks, and they'd never released these documents from Edward Snowden. But they released documents on Friday that effectively confirm that the shadow broker's preliminary data dump is real. It really did come from the NSA, authentic NSA software and hacking tools. Now, you can never know for sure. It's possible that the shadow brokers also hacked The Intercept and got the Snowden documents and forged this somehow. But it's a little bit more real. Cisco, who was the target of some of these exploits, confirmed that yes, not only are they real exploits, but that the NSA or somebody has been using them for years. So I think it's safe at this point to say, yeah, these are probably real. So the next question, how'd they get them? Don't know. You would think that the NSA would be super secure. So the fact that they got into the NSA and broke out with documents is a little scary. How dangerous are these? Not so dangerous, because they're really tools to be used once you've already infiltrated a network. They're sophisticated tools, at least the ones that have been released so far, designed for kind of a more sophisticated hacking operation, probably a government level hacking operation. Doesn't make them less dangerous. They're also kind of old. They're several years old. Wow. This is a group called inside the NSA called the Equation Group, described by a security firm named Kaspersky last year as a threat actor that surpasses anything known. A threat actor is I don't want to say a bad guy because it's for our team, so a good guy that's surpasses anything known in terms of complexity and sophistication of techniques, and that has been active for, get this, almost 2 decades, 20 years. They were the ones who created Stuxnet. Stuxnet was a very clever little virus designed to destroy the centrifuges in Iranian nuclear enrichment plants. It was very targeted, right? In fact, these centrifuges, which used control software called SCADA, were offline. They were what the geeks call air-gapped. There was a gap between them and the internet and the outside world. So you couldn't just sneak in via the internet. You had to get it on a USB key and then get somebody to bring the USB key into the Iranian. This is worthy of a movie. If there isn't a James Bond-style movie about this someday, there is already a very good documentary about it by Alex Gibney called Zero Days. Highly recommended. I think it's on Netflix. It's around. In fact, it's been in the theaters. But this Stuxnet virus was carefully designed to only attack these Iranian centrifuges, to hobble their enrichment attempts, their attempts to craft a nuclear bomb. Of course, that was probably us, maybe the Israeli government. That's who we think it was. Maybe the Equation Group, seems to be widely agreed. Except it leaked and got out, and it as Stuxnet affected a lot of other people. Oh, whoops. Whoops. So it raises some interesting issues. First of all, of course, there's this issue of if what limits do you have on cyber attacks? Because they've got hackers too. We've got hackers. They've got hackers. Maybe our hackers are better than their hackers. I don't see evidence of that. So that's problem number one. Do you really want to get into this escalation, this war of cyber attacks? Because it could be devastating. We know, for instance, that our infrastructure in the United States is highly vulnerable to cyber attack. The electrical grid, for instance, it's not designed to sustain a cyber attack very well. Each individual provider, electric company, has their own computers, their own security systems, many of which are very, very bad. Very poorly designed, sometimes with very old versions of Windows online. You know what that means. Plus, the system's designed in such a way that, and we've seen this in blackouts, when one goes out, it kind of cascades. So it's widely believed that our electrical grid is vulnerable. The federal government's making attempts to set standards to help these individual private and public power companies to harden their facilities, but I think they have a long way to go. Other parts of our infrastructure are also vulnerable, our water system. So cyber attacks are scary, just as scary for us as they'd be for anybody else, maybe more so, because aren't we kind of heavily dependent on technology? Yeah. There's also the issue of, well, if the NSA designs these and can't keep a lid on them, if bad guys can break in and steal them, if Stuxnet can leak out and infect other systems, including, by the way, Scott is designed by Siemens, is used widely around the world, other including our own industrial installations. Well, wait a minute. Maybe this is what was that movie, The Spy Who Couldn't Shoot Straight? Maybe this the gang who couldn't maybe this is a gang that can't shoot straight. The problem, we've seen this time and time again, is once you create these cyber weapons, it's very hard to keep a lid on them. Once a golden key exists, it will leak out. Once a virus is made, it will leak out. And that's not good for anybody. So if you've read about this, it's a continuing story. It's been breaking all week. And maybe you thought, well, I don't know. What does this mean? How does this apply to me? Well, that's how it applies to you. We already have a very fragile cyber infrastructure. And we're just making it more vulnerable. But you've got your own infrastructure, your own problems. We can talk about those too. 888-ASK-LEO. I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still reach us. Just use your Skype or your voice over the internet. What could possibly go wrong? That's our new motto. What could possibly go wrong? 888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What could possibly go wrong? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. I have the Samsung Galaxy Note 7. It arrived on Thursday. I've been playing with it. I'll talk about that, give you my review. Although I could say in a nutshell, awesome phone. I was, you know, my favorite phone of the year so far was the Galaxy S7. If you're willing to pay $850, it's expensive. And there are phones that are nearly as good for half that. So, as I mentioned, the ZTE Axon, the OnePlus 3. There's a new one just coming out from Xiaomi we're going to take a look at. So there are Chinese high-end phones that are half as much. But, you know, Apple and Samsung still put out the kind of top-of-the-line, you know, spare-no-expense phone. And I have to say the Galaxy Note 7 is very, very impressive. So I'll give you a little more detailed review of that in a little bit. We'll also talk about more problems with Windows, the anniversary update. In fact, a surprising problem that many people are having. I've been having my own problems with it. Maybe you are too. Looks like Microsoft, which tested this heavily. I was part of the public beta. I was testing it on a Microsoft Surface Book and didn't have any of these problems. But I guess that as widespread as the tests were, they weren't able to get it to everybody or enough people to avoid some very major problems, surprisingly major problems. So we'll talk about that, too. But I think we should go to the phones. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is in the house. Hello, Heather.
Hey, good morning.
Are you chilly? You got the sweater on.
I'm all right. I'll probably get warm. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful day in Northern California.
Always is in Petaluma.
Always a beautiful day in Petaluma. Who should I talk to here?
Let's help Henry in Santa Fe, New Mexico with his hack.
Henry's hack. All right. Hi, Henry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Henry.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Say, I've been loving your show for a long time. In fact, I worked with you for a while at the Screensavers. I was an intern for you.
Nice. Well,
yes.
That's nice to talk to you. That's wonderful. That was way back. What year were you an intern?
2003.
Nice. And did you go on to fame and fortune?
I guess we can redefine fame and maybe fortune as well. But I tell you, Leo, I went on, and I'm a news editor, and I run websites, and I consult with other news companies about social media and getting it right online.
Hey, and you clearly learned some stuff at the Screensavers. That's awesome.
Hey, I tell people all the time that you and this crew there at the Screensavers, you were my graduate school.
Nice.
You guys taught me what I needed to know.
Henry, that's wonderful. So, well, I'm thrilled to hear that.
It's wonderful. Yeah. So here's my my little problem, and I don't get stumped often, but here's what it is. I've got an old Galaxy Note 2 that I'm not using, has no service. I just want to use it as a little media appliance.
Yeah. Yeah, but that makes sense. It's a phablet.
Absolutely.
And if you don't have a phone, then it's just a small tablet. It's a 6-inch tablet.
Absolutely. If I drop it at the gym, no problem.
Right.
But here's the thing. I'm way behind on the version of Android that I'm on. So how can I get updated Android since those updates were coming over the air with my former carrier?
Yeah, and this is a really good time to do this. Go to xda-developers.com. This is a forum for Android. It's wonderful. It's full of people who are modifying their Android devices. You search for your specific device, and I don't just mean Samsung Galaxy Note 2. You're going to want to get the device ID in the About This Phone section, because there are different devices in different regions of the world. And so you need to get the, you know, NU910A or whatever it is, so that you get exactly the right designation. Search for that, and they'll talk about what it takes, and this is what you'll want to do at this point, to root it and put a more recent version of Android on. In fact, there's some really great choices out there. Samsung has recently made that more difficult because of their Knox platform and security. But I don't think with the Note 2 they did. But even if they did, you can get around it. Especially the older, it's really the case that the older the phone, the more likely there's a great hack for it. So you can get around it, but what you may find is that voids your warranty. Oh, really? But it's 6 years old. I guess that's okay, right? So
that's totally okay.
So it will turn off some features like the Knox feature. I don't think you even have Knox on a Note 2. It would turn, but if you have a later Note, this would turn off Knox. Some like Netflix wouldn't work anymore because they can't validate that you're not pirating the movie somehow using software, stuff like that. But it's not. That's not going to affect you. Netflix should work fine. In fact. Because it's an older Note. So, you'll find, I'm sure, for the Note 2, a variety of ROMs is what we call them. They're really just new operating systems. These phones, I mean, this is a computer. So if you think of it as a computer, it has storage. It has firmware. The firmware is the operating system. And you can modify that firmware. You need to replace, you need to root it, which gives you full access to it, and then replace what they call the recovery partition, which is the thing that you go into. If something goes wrong, you can press and hold the home and on and down power, volume down button, or it varies per phone, but to get into the recovery mode and restore the ROM.
What could possibly go wrong?
You're going to love this. Now, it helps if you have you need a PC because you'll need to download some software, but follow the only thing I would say, don't get cocky. Follow the instructions exactly. If you follow the recipe on xda-developers.com for your and get as specific as you can, as I said, you won't run into any trouble. I've done it so many times. And then once you put a custom recovery on it, the sky's the limit. You could have a new operating system every day and try stuff till you find something you really like.
Loving it.
Yeah, this is time to do that. That's a really good time to do that when it's a phone that you're not using as your telephone anymore. It's just a computer of yours now. It's just a portable computer.
A computer with a phone app.
Yeah, exactly. And frankly, I'm of the firm belief that in the next couple of years, they will take the phone apps off of these phones. That these phones will be really internet devices with internet calling on it. Google's moving in that direction. They just released Google Duo, which is a video calling app. And if you put Google Duo and then maybe Skype or something on this Note 2 and use the internet, it would be a phone. You can even buy a phone number for Skype. People can call it. There'd be no difference between that and a phone that uses AT&T or Sprint or T-Mobile or Verizon, except you're not. You're using internet.
That's right. Love it.
Nice to see you again, Henry. I wish I could say I remembered you, but that was a long time ago, and I'm an old man.
Thank you, too. Hey, you know what? I have plenty of memories for both of us.
Share some with us. If you have any pictures, I'd love to see them.
I will tag you in
Put them on Facebook or Twitter and tag me. That'd be great. I'd appreciate that. Thanks, right. Henry. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Laporte, the tech guy. We take a break now. Do we have Skype capability? Yes. Scott Wilkinson joining us? No.
But he's on vacation.
He's on vacation. Well, then I'm just going to talk some more. More of your calls right after this. Never had a problem with that. Scott Wilkinson, I have learned, has the week off. Lucky fella. So no problem. It means I get to talk to you more, and I like doing that. Let's start with Steve in Apple Valley, California. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Hey, not too bad. At the end of the first segment, you said what could possibly go wrong.
It's a classic technology motto.
So I'm outside repairing my sprinkler valves. I have six of them I got to replace. And so I'm replacing them. I'm cutting PVC pipe. And so I cut one pipe, and it's a 110-volt electrical line going to my shed. So I lost the power to my shed, so I can't use my tools in the shed now.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? I just thought of that when you said that.
You know, it's just those of us who live and work with technology understand it's very hard to predict. And that's why it worries me that we've got these very talented hacking teams in the federal government making these tools, and they're leaking out. That's scary.
That is unbelievable. It's just unreal, especially with if they're doing that with Cisco's too.
Yeah, I mean, everybody uses Cisco, right?
Oh, yeah.
The tool that they leaked would only be useful if you'd already gotten into the network. So you would have to penetrate the network somehow, and then you could use this tool to give you full access.
Yeah, and that's kind of scary.
Just a little.
Big time.
Cisco, by the way, not happy.
No, they're not. Hey, got some questions for you. Hey, I got an old HP Pavilion Elite desktop that I taking a dive on me now, so I want to get a new laptop instead.
Yeah.
And I do photos, and I store all my photos on an external hard drive and also to Carbonite.
Great.
And so they're all backed up, and it's a good thing I do that because I lost one of my external hard drives, and now everything is backed up to Carbonite.
Yeah, you learn, don't you? You learn. Everybody should have one small data failure just to remind them. Oh.
That was saving grace right there.
Yep.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
But I'm looking at the Esperon 17-7000.
You want a big screen. You like that big old screen.
Well, I'm going blind. I'm getting old, so I can't see, right?
So there are a couple of choices on this. Yeah, that's a nice, by the way, very nice laptop. Dell has done some very good job with their hardware.
Okay.
One thing to think about, if portability is at all an issue, is getting a smaller screen and a large screen at home, because all the modern laptops have, you can, you know, in effect, dock. You can put,
right. You
know, and then that way you can have a 27-inch screen or a 30-inch screen at home. You can have as big as you want, but you have more portability. But if portability is not an issue, yeah, that's a great laptop.
Yeah, it's not an issue. Just I do have the larger screen at home, and I will only take it out maybe occasionally. So it basically just be used for home. And I've been doing a lot of research on it, and my wife told me to give you a call before I actually pulled the trigger, so I'm kind of anxious.
Smart wife.
Well, you helped her a lot in the past with her her iPad and also with her cell phone.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad I could be of help.
She told me to call you.
That's cute.
I was going to buy it, and she goes, no.
No, get Leo's approval first. No, Dell makes great stuff. You should know that a 17-inch is going to get poor battery life because it's driving that big screen, but it sounds like you don't care about that. So.
No, I really don't, because I got everything, like I said, backed up to the external hard drive in the cloud, so I don't store anything on the laptop.
Portable's not a big deal anyway. Let me ask you, do you use Lightroom? What software do you use?
I use Lightroom and Photoshop.
Okay.
I got a subscription to Photoshop. So
you're going to want lots of memory.
Right.
RAM, in other words, storage. Yep. Storage is not as critical. I do the same thing. I put like a 512 or 100 or a 256 gig hard drive internally, and then I only keep the photos that I'm currently working on, and
right.
then move the rest of them off when I'm done with them to save space on the hard drive. SSD is a great thing. So,
okay. So
really get a solid state drive. That makes more difference than anything.
Gotcha. Yeah, because the one I got looking at is a 16 gig with the 512 SSD.
Perfect. Perfect.
All right, cool. And then the other, one more thing, it doesn't have a DVD or a player in it, so I'm looking at the external one they have. So I'm going to get that plus the wireless keyboard.
Sounds great.
Yeah, appreciate it, man.
Seal of approval.
Tell your wife I
gave you permission.
I'll let her know right now.
You're welcome, Steve.
All right, bye. Hey,
thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, they're, you know, SSDs. Solid-state drives have made such a difference in performance. And really, it's a good thing because, frankly, the processors from 3 and 4 years ago are plenty fast enough. Intel has not really made, and they'll even admit this, much of a difference in speed as they've upgraded their processors. They've improved them for other things, less heat, better battery life. But we're talking maybe 5 or 10% improvement at best. So the processors are not getting faster. What makes your computer faster today, though, is the new drives. And those are getting faster. In fact, if you're looking at a laptop, I would look at a drive that is not a... So SSDs are hard drives. They are not the same as the spinning drives. They're now the same kind of memory. If you're a photographer, you'll know as the flash memory in your camera. with a lot of sophisticated additional kind of firmware to make it work well. And, of course, they're getting better and better at making these, they call them NAND chips, these non-volatile memory chips, flash chips. So solid-state drives are kind of that, but they, like any hard drive, can connect in a variety of ways to a computer. The first solid-state drives use the SATA bus, which is how we connect a spinning drive. And SATA, at this point, goes as fast as 6 gigabits a second. That's SATA 3. But these drives are even faster than that. So people looked at better ways to connect the drive. They started connecting them to the PCI Express bus. That's a faster bus than the SATA bus. And the newest drives are NVMe. This is the acronym that you're looking for. NVMe, or non-volatile memory host controller. I know. That should be NVMHC, but it's not. I don't know why. It's NVMe, which stands for non-volatile meh, and then Marie host controller is kind of understood. It is it's attached to PCI Express, but it's a faster way of doing it. And an NVMe drive will be even faster. The drive doesn't get faster, just the connection to your computer. But the drives now are so fast, and they are getting faster, that the fastest connection you can get makes a big difference. So if you're buying a solid state drive, of course, if you're adding it to an existing computer, you'll be putting it on a SATA 1 or 2 or 3 bus. Still a benefit. There's zero seek time. I mean, there's still benefits to it, but you'll get the maximum benefit if you put it on a fast bus. That's what they call this. You want the fastest bus, the fastest highway to your processor, and that is the new NVMe controller. So, if you can, I mean, when you're buying that laptop, look for that. Sometimes it'll say M.2. That's the way it's connected. N.2 NVMe. All the laptops I've purchased of late have been M.2 NVMe. It really makes a big difference. Apple started this trend, I think, they started using the PCI Express bus for their memory on their laptops. Now, some interesting things last week at the Intel Developers Forum. They're not resting on their laurels by any means. Intel has a new memory storage technology called CrossPoint. And the cross is an X. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. So it looks like XPoint, but it's pronounced CrossPoint. And this memory storage is 1,000 times faster. 1,000 times faster than your SSD. So fast that it's almost as fast as RAM. And in some of newer, I think we'll see newer architectures over the next few years that will, instead of having RAM, they'll just do it all in CrossPoint. By the way, the first CrossPoint will be very expensive for high-end applications, and it's coming later this year. It's soon. So keep your eye peeled for that. That's the next big thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. And let's go back to the phones. And Paul, he's in Culver City, California. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I love listening to your show.
Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it.
So I have a question. I have I'm looking for an IP camera, basically like a security camera with the ability to save the videos, you know, offline locally on my computer so that I can edit them. And what I've run into is that you either have to use some kind of conversion file or anyway, one of the issues is it needs to be, I'm looking for a high def, and I'm having a hard time finding a high def, you know, IP camera has motion detection. Basically, you know, I guess like a security camera.
Yeah.
I want to use it for pet videos, believe it or not, because we like to watch our pets, and then I want to save these things and edit together videos of our pets. And
So here's what I recommend. You've already gone through a lot of, you know, the first thing everybody looks at is the Nest camera from Google, from their Nest division. That's what we use. In fact, I don't know if you saw during the break, I was playing time lapses of our studio.
I did, and I guess I actually haven't looked at the Nest. I've looked at a lot of the Piper and different things.
Yeah, I like the Nests. They're very high quality. They're high resolution. They do a couple of things that you probably will like. For instance, you can check them live. But that means they use a lot of internet bandwidth, about a megabit per camera, upstream bandwidth. So that's sometimes an issue for people. If it's just one camera, probably not. But when you have multiple cameras, that can add up. They don't offer local recording. They record on, and you have to pay a fee for this. Not huge, but you pay a monthly fee for offline recording, which is convenient because they just, you know, when they're uploading the image, you know, that's they record it at the same time. If you want to do local recording, a little more complicated. You have to set up a connection to the camera. You have to have something recording it. A lot of security cameras record, but they record to a DVR-like device. And that's not really what you want. You can download the Nest videos and edit them and use them later.
Is it basically like cloud storage?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's just a little easier for you because you don't have to wire the camera. It's wireless. It's Wi-Fi, and you don't have to hook it up to your computer and figure out how to capture it, leave your computer on all day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, are there any – because I know some of them have, like, they'll record on a micro SD card.
Yeah. So if you want to do local recording, the company to look at is Axis, AXIS.com.
Okay.
They have a very broad range of cameras that have, you know, whatever feature that you're looking for, they'll have a camera that can do it. They even have cameras that you can remotely pan, tilt, and zoom. So if you want to zoom in on a doggy, you know, what is he doing over there? You can actually zoom. Most of these other cameras are fixed wide-angle cameras. But the PT, and of course, you pay the price for PTZ, pan, tilt, zoom.
I see.
They have panoramic cameras. They have fixed cameras. They have Wi-Fi cameras. They have wired cameras.
Yeah, something I was looking at. It might have been Piper. They do like a fisheye, so that you can, you know, see a huge panoramic thing, and then and the software kind of like flattens it out into quadrants. But you know what I mean? But I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
If I look at the raw video, it's not going
to
be.
Yeah, you have to flatten it before you can even look at it. But
yeah.
That's common. Axis has both hosted cloud storage as well as local storage. They offer you can buy a camera station from them, or you can use their software. So
okay.
Axis is kind of the high end, I think, very good pro solution. We've used both, and that's why I'm familiar with both. As you've learned, there are literally thousands of choices, and part of this is because these cameras are all made in China. And, you know, there's a few factories just cranking them out, and then companies buy them, label them, and put them out. The thing I would be careful about with kind of smaller, lesser-known companies is security.
Okay.
We've seen this, boy, time and time again, where these cameras have pay zero attention to security, and people can find your camera on the internet, see it, watch it, turn it on at will. You may not want that.
Right.
And that's been a real problem with a lot of these Chinese knockoffs, and even some brand names like Foscam that are very, very well known. But Axis is good, and Nest is good. They used to be called Dropcam.
Okay.
And Nest rebranded them, and I think they're very good. And we've used those over the years with great results, and the security on them is strong.
Great.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have fun with your doggies.
It's actually rabbits. Three rabbits.
Oh, rabbits. Well, we know what they're up to. Most of the time, they're sleeping, right? Yeah. We had rabbits as a kid, from when my kids were kids, as parents.
Right.
And it's really fun. And my goodness, they multiply. They multiply fast.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. And then well, I don't even want to tell this story. We moved to the country, and we decided, oh, they don't need a cage, and then they disappeared.
Aw. Yeah. Well, one thing, they're not going to go extinct anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. They are awfully sweet, though. I love
them. Have you seen that rabbit island in Japan? Yeah, there's some video.
And it's actually scary now.
Yeah.
You can't. They'll attack you.
Yes.
Don't go to Rabbit Island. Hey, enjoy your rabbits.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. Rabbit Cam. We put all of the things we talk about on the web at techguylabs.com. It's a free site. There's no sign up. You can just go there. It's wide open. And all the shows are there, questions and answers. So this would, you know, this would be our question four and hour number one. So if you have a thought or, you know, you maybe you have bunnies and you have your own camera system or maybe you have some ideas, please go there and add your comments. It's very valuable. We really appreciate that. TechGuyLabs.com. It's also the place to go if you can't, you know, you can't remember, you can't write it down, or you can't remember and you want, oh, what were you talking about? You don't need to email me. You probably won't get a response anyway because I'm terrible about email. But if you go to techguylabs.com, everything's there, including, I'm happy to say, audio and video after the fact. We put the audio and the video up, so if you miss a show, you can also go there. Art Corona. Hi, Art. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Run to the phone, Art. Run to the phone. Hi, Art.
I'm here. Okay. All right. I'm in Windows 10 and the browser, and I'm turn it on, I've got two screens. So periodically, after, I don't know, so many minutes, 5, 10, X minutes, I get a dialog box, and it says, Windows is not working properly. It needs to shut down.
Oy.
And I'm wondering,
are you getting the blue screen or just a little box?
No,
and
just
it says,
a little box.
It says Windows or Edge or the browser. What does it say? Is it the browser that's shutting down or Windows?
Yes.
Okay.
The browser. The browser.
And you're using the fat E for Edge, not Internet Explorer.
I'm using Internet Explorer.
Oh, Explorer. That's, by the way, not the default browser on Windows 10. You know that, right?
Yeah. Well, it's a desktop. The Edge has the touchscreen feature, I think, right?
Yeah. Hang on. We're going to take a break. I'll help you out a little bit with this. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Are you still there? So there are two browsers on Windows 10. The default
okay.
browser is Edge. It is not specifically a touch browser. It is more like a it's really designed more to be the modern browser. They intend for you to use it on desktop. The
okay.
people haven't used Edge that much because it's been kind of in an unfinished state, although with the latest anniversary update, which came out a couple of weeks ago, it's pretty full-featured. If Internet Explorer is crashing a lot, it could be that you know, one of its files is corrupt. But I would first clear the history in the cache, reset the browser. Okay?
Okay.
Because sometimes what happens is something, you know, a messed up piece of art or graphic or something gets stuck in there and it crashes it. Does it crash right away or as you use it?
No, it's after a while. I mean, I've also got a Google browser that I'm opening up at the same
time.
Yeah,
Chrome is great, and I would stick with Chrome, frankly.
Okay. But it's an annoyance because it'll come up. I don't know why. Maybe I'm running too much memory, too many programs, but it does come up, and then I got to close it down. And I have my Outlook or my Hotmail on there and some other programs. I just got to reboot it, just restart that browser.
Yeah, first thing I would do is delete your browsing history, and you can do that. It's in the it's in the settings, the little gear there, and you'll mm-hmm. and it actually gives you some pretty granular choices about doing that. Once you go to delete browser history, it's in safety, I guess. You can choose whether you want to preserve stuff or not. I would delete everything you don't know you want. You know, passwords you might want to save.
Yeah.
You can save cookies if you want. Just try deleting the temporary internet files to begin with. And then
okay.
if that doesn't fix it, get more aggressive. And if it still doesn't fix it, well, it probably got corrupted somehow. And repairing Internet Explorer is a little bit complicated. You'll have to Google repair Internet Explorer for Windows 10 and you'll see a step-by-step mm-hmm. thing to do. It's more steps than I should give you over the phone.
Yeah, that's fine. I've been kind of playing around with it when it does pop up.
And you might, the other thing is check plugins, because sometimes plugins, Internet, let's put it this way. Internet Explorer, pure Internet Explorer on Windows 10 works fine. Something has happened, right? And so we're trying to figure out what's happened. It could be the files are damaged, in which case you'd have to reinstall it. But that's the last thing. The first thing you want to do are like clear the cache, clear the history, clear temp files, then look at plugins and extensions and everything that it could be. Sometimes, you know, if you download shareware from downloads.com or Softpedia on these shareware sites, without being obvious, they install additional browser extensions like toolbars and things. They can be poorly coded. They can cause crashes. So you want to remove any plugins that you don't think you're not sure you need. I would remove everything.
And,
because those plugins, they can be causes of crashes as well.
Does a Windows update, would that do anything?
You want and need to run Windows Update because those are security fixes that you have to apply.
Yeah. And I do that automatically.
Yes, so that should be automatic. That should be automatic. The most common cause for crashes in Internet Explorer are bad plugins.
Okay.
So I would get rid of anything you don't know. You're gonna, you know, Flash might need to be updated. Is it any particular site you see this in regularly?
I can't tell. It's because I could be doing anything on the Google browser when I'm playing around there.
Yeah, because it has its own Flash. But if Flash is damaged and you go to a site that uses Flash, and frankly, too many sites still use it for things you don't even know, they're like controls and buttons, that could be crashing it as well. So turn off plugins. You can do it temporarily. You can also run the Internet Explorer in safe mode. Actually, that might be the first thing to do. Let me see what the... let me look that up because... Internet Explorer safe mode... Often it's in the menu. Like if you go to the Internet Explorer menu, there'll be a safe mode. But you can also do it with a command line command. Actually, you'll have to Google that as well. I'm not going to tell you this long, crazy command. But there may be an icon for it in your Internet Explorer folder in your menu. So and see. Run it in safe mode first. And if you run it in safe mode and it doesn't crash, then you know it's some add-on, right?
Hmm. That gets me a head start. That gives me some things to do. Well, Leo, thank you so much. I totally enjoy your show.
Oh, I'm so glad you listened.
From something.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can also reach us via Skype outside those areas. Our website, techguylabs.com. I finished off the air with our caller who's having trouble with the Internet Explorer. Same advice I would give anybody having trouble with a browser is to clear out the temp files, the cache files. Easiest thing to do with Internet Explorer is to start it in safe mode or no extension mode. Now, you have to do that from the command line unless, you know, a lot of times when you install Windows, makes it in the menu, you know, the start menu, there's an Internet Explorer folder and there'll be a safe mode icon in there. If you have that, just use that. If it doesn't crash while you're in safe mode, then it's some extension. And the problem is, I hate to say it, software often installs extensions. If you download from one of the download sites, they love to put money-making extensions on your browser. Downloads.com, Softpedia, and others, what they'll often do is they'll say, oh, if you want to download this free shareware program we didn't write but we happen to store here, you'll need our special downloading tool. Would you like to install that? And you go, okay. Then look carefully. Because there's a lot of boxes and a lot of verbiage, and somewhere in that verbiage, would you like to install the Ask toolbar? And it's default check yes. So you got to be very careful. It's become so bad, there's actually a tool called Unclicky. I don't know if it still works. It's been around for a long time. But just the fact that it exists is kind of amazing. It's telling. Unclicky will automatically uncheck all those extra boxes. I think best thing to do is to, you may want some of them, is to look at them all carefully. And don't just go as we all do, okay, I'm in a hurry, I want this. So what can often happen is stuff gets installed on your system you don't really want. And sometimes it's toolbars on your browser. And they make money on those. A lot of times, you know, they if you get the Ask toolbar installed in your browser, every time you use it, the company that installed it, Softpedia or downloads.com or whoever, gets a penny or two or a tenth or whatever. It's a profit deal, see? That's what I'm talking about. So the command, as Dr. Mom is putting in our chat room, is I'm not sure I like giving command line commands out over the air. Chances for typo are great. You could always Google Start Explorer in safe mode or hit Command R. I don't want to give it that. Command R and type iExplore.exe space dash noext. That's for no extensions. But that may not work because it's a long story and I don't want to get into it. Just Google it. Ed in Lyle. Hi, Ed. Lyle, California?
Oh, I got a problem with something here.
Okay.
I got a computer. It was used, but it was cleaned off and they put Windows 7 on it. And it came with Firefox. And whenever you open up Firefox, it goes to Google.
What did it come with? Player Box? What is that?
Yeah, it goes to Google.
What is what? Wait a minute. What it came with? What? What is it? Player Box? What are you saying? Play Box? What is it?
Firefox.
Oh, Firefox. But every time you open Firefox, it opens Google.
Yeah, it goes right on the screen.
Yeah, that's called the home page. Yeah, you want to change that?
I keep on changing it to a blank page, and it keeps on putting up the Google. It's
what?
Someplace.
That's another example sometimes of an issue, like I was talking about earlier, where somebody has modified the start screen on your Firefox. So you're changing it in the Firefox settings, right?
Yeah, and I change it, and it goes right back. I've been considering just going over to Linux or something, get rid of this topic.
Well, it's not the end of the world that you're getting the Google as your start page, but you could have something else. You just want a blank page, right?
Yeah. And I go there and you know, check the blank page, and I go back, turn it off, turn it on, make sure there's nothing left in memory, and it comes back up with this stupid thing of Google with these balls or something bouncing around.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody has modified your Firefox. This sounds exactly like what I was talking about, where somebody's making a little money because that start page is popping up instead of the blank screen you want. So first of all, check the toolbars that you've installed on Firefox and remove any toolbars that are on there. You don't want them.
I don't have them.
No toolbars, nothing like that.
No.
Another thing you can do is, and this is a little weird one, you can do it in the Firefox settings. In fact, with Firefox, as I remember, you can drag any home page to the home button and make it your home page, but you want a blank page. So what you can do...
I also tried to drag in another thing to the start page.
And that didn't change it.
Startpage.com, you know, is type of page. But anyway...
So,
no matter what I do,
are you double clicking an icon on the desktop to start Firefox? Is that how you're starting it?
Just one click is all it takes.
Yeah, it's a little icon on the desktop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that icon may actually be the source of your problems. What you need to do is right click on that icon. A little menu will pop up, and you select Properties. And you want to look at the shortcut tab of those properties, because that's when you have a little icon like that, that has a shortcut, you can click, and that runs whatever's in that text field that says target. And it's probably saying firefox.exe space and then some page that you don't want. So you can modify that. And that's the first thing I would do. If you can run Firefox from the start menu and this doesn't happen, then that's what's going on. It's the alias on the shortcut on your desktop. So this isn't, I know it's annoying. It's not worth going to Linux, although you know I'm a fan. But you probably want to go and look at that shortcut that you're using and see if that's launching a specific page. There are more nefarious ways that they can modify your start page. And probably, remember we were talking about resetting Internet Explorer? If it isn't the icon and you've tried, you know, having a blank page as your start page and that doesn't work and you can't drag it to the home button and change it, then what you want to do is start Firefox or refresh Firefox to give it a could get rid of everything. So there's a refresh button on the top right corner of a special page you can go to. You type in about:// support and refresh Firefox, and it will erase Firefox. There's also a refresh Firefox button in the safe mode. So if you have a Firefox safe mode in the Firefox folder in the start menu, it's funny how these two callers are so similar. You can refresh it there. That will get rid of any toolbars, any extensions, anything that's been added to Firefox is probably what you want to do. The reason we get so many calls about this, this is a very common way for, I don't want to say bad guys, but it is bad behavior for sites to modify your homepage and get you to make them a little money, get them to click on stuff, get you to click on stuff you don't necessarily want to click on, things like that. So Firefox Safe Mode is your friend here. Same with Internet Explorer. It's your friend. We're going to take a break. We are ready for a little commercial, but we'll be back with Joe in Garden Grove, California. He's ready to buy a new MacBook Pro. Joe, wait. I'll tell you what the rumors say. And I'll also give you a review of this new Galaxy Note 7. Brand new phone just came out. Samsung shipped it just in the nick of time, right before the new iPhone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Come on, take a free ride on the tech train. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. We go to Garden Grove. Joe is next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Leo, thank you so much for taking my phone call.
Hey, thanks for calling. I appreciate your calling.
Love your show. You really help out the common man, let me tell you.
You know, I feel like we're all in it together, right? There's the computer industry, and then there's us. And we just, you know, if we don't help ourselves, they aren't going to help us. So we just kind of have to do it ourselves.
There you go. Well, I hope I'm going to be a fun phone call for you because you're going to help me buy a new Mac. So it's your money. You get to build it. believe it or not, I'm still using a 13-year-old MacBook Pro laptop.
What?
Just now starting to slow down.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Isn't that one with a power PC in it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the first gen. The thing weighs like 20 pounds.
Well, and yeah, and you can't run any modern software on it either.
That's part of the problem. I tried to put some music on my new iPhone, and I can't update iTunes.
No, you can't do anything.
I can no longer update this machine.
Well, the good news is there are, I believe, new Macs coming. The bad news is it won't be till October.
Oh, I can wait. That's why I waited 13 years.
Yeah. Well, Apple's waited more than 2 years to update its MacBook Pro, so there you go. Apple has not moved fast either. And really, one of the arguments is what I was talking about earlier, which is that Intel hasn't really given it much reason to. But Apple has finally, I think... This is the rumor. Remember, Apple doesn't pre-announce anything. But the rumor is, and it's from credible sources, and it's fairly strong. And the reason it's strong is if they're going to start selling them in a couple of months, they must be making them now, right? Or at least prototyping them now. So we've seen pictures of aluminum case, you know, a unibody case and stuff. But this is all subject to change. MacBooks are not like iPhones, where they have to make 10 million ahead of time, or 20 million or 30 million ahead of time. So but what we're hearing from Ming-Chi Kuo, who's an analyst who covers the supply chain in China, the people who make the parts, and from Mark Gurman, who is, of course, very well positioned to get all the rumors. He went from 9 to 5 Mac. He's now at Bloomberg. Both say we will see a new MacBook Pro. You want a laptop, right?
Actually, no. I'm thinking about going with an iMac.
Oh! Don't know if they're going to update the iMacs. And I must say, the 5K iMacs they're currently selling are amazing.
Okay, that sounds good.
So I'd have, I would not necessarily wait. There may be some updates to the iMac in the fall, but I think, no, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. When you said, I thought you were going to get a laptop. Those will be updated this fall, I'm sure of it. But the iMac, if it's an update, will be a minor update. It'll be an update to maybe Kaby Lake, the new Intel processor that'll be coming out in a month. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. I would not hesitate to get an iMac today.
Okay. You know, where I'm having an issue at is that it's really confusing. You go in a place like B&H Photo, and they have 20 million different Macs you can have. I have about a $2,000 budget.
It's kind of ironic because Apple's famous for having fewer choices,
yeah.
not more choices. But yeah, it's still a little confusing. The way I shop before I go to B&H or anywhere is I go to the Apple store online, store.apple.com. And the reason I do that is because they lay out, I think, in a very effective way what the choices are and explain the differences. So if you go to the iMac page on the Apple store, you'll see the first distinction is the size of the display, 21 inches or 27 inches.
Yeah, I'm there now. So, yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
So I'd go, you know, if you can afford it, and I think $2,000 will be enough, I would go with a 27, not merely because it's bigger, but because it's this beautiful 5K display. It's the best display Apple has ever made.
Okay.
So it's just remarkable. Now, I after that, we're going to have to drill down a little bit into how much RAM and so forth. So let's select the 5K display. Processor, you don't have to worry so much about the processor. They really only give you two choices, 3.2 or 3.3 gigahertz. RAM, you can configure it for more. 8 gigs is plenty to start, especially for you. It looks like they want you to get this Fusion Drive. Not crazy about the Fusion Drive.
You're not.
No. So let's take a look at what else you can get. You can get 256 gigs of flash storage. We're going to keep it under 2,000 here. That's right now at $19.99. The flash storage is faster than the Fusion Drive, unless you know you need a huge amount of capacity. How big, just out of curiosity, is the hard drive on your current Mac?
Oh, boy.
It's not gigs. It's megs.
Yeah.
So 256 gigabytes is a lot. It's a lot. Okay. And that's really the only choice you need to make, whether you wanted to put in more RAM. And you can, but I think 8 gigs is fine. And what kind of drive?
And these are expandable, where if I order with 8 gigs, I can go to 16 with it. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where I was actually hitting a little bump in the road, you know, I like to research everything, and I got my list here. They got a thing called an AMD Radeon R9 M38. What is that?
That's a graphics processor.
Okay.
Are you going to play games on this?
No games. I'm like a mid-level graphic designer. Yeah. Nothing too hardcore, but I like to have Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign open, Internet open.
You're fine. Start with the $17.99 one. Add a faster drive. You can always use an external drive if you need more storage.
Okay.
I would get the 27 if you're a graphics designer. That Retina display is not only super beautiful, but it's very accurate. That's important to you. 8 gigs is enough. If you can squeeze a little more out of your budget, go up to 16. That's plenty.
Okay.
And if you want to get a bigger drive, you could, but I think 256 is plenty. You're going to have more than 200 gigs free. It just takes a little discipline to get rid of the stuff. You know, you can't be a pack rat. But this is so much more than you used to have. I think you already have that discipline.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
And you want external drives anyway for backup and Time Machine and stuff like that.
Okay.
External drives are so cheap. I see no reason to load the internal drive up. So, yeah, for under $2,000, I think you're getting it. Don't worry about the Radeon M380 versus the 395. Big deal.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not even going to look at that. Where it says 1 terabyte, 7,200 RPM hard drive.
Don't get that.
Don't get that.
Okay. No. You're going to get the 256 gig solid state drive. It's a smaller drive.
SSD. Okay.
SSD, but it's so much faster, it will completely change your experience. Apple pushes you towards a hybrid solution that includes some solid state and some spinning. That's because for a lower cost, they can give you more storage. I firmly recommend getting the 256 gig SSD.
Okay. And that would be the 1 terabyte, right?
No, 256 gigs.
Okay, so I'm looking here. It says up to 1 terabyte.
Yeah, up to. But when you go actually to choose it, when it comes to flash storage, you only have two choices.
Okay.
512 or 256. You don't need that much storage. I think you're fine with 256. And you can always use external storage if you need more. But that speed makes all the difference in the world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by those good folks at Audible. You know, you don't have to ask. When I say Audible, you know I'm an Audible fan. I've been an Audible user since 2000. I love it. Audible is the world's largest audiobook store. You can learn stuff. You can learn languages. It's part of your subscription, too. They have language software, the Pimsleur series, all of that. They have the great courses, too, college lectures by the best teachers in the country. I love those great courses. There's a ton of great stuff on Audible. And, of course, all the best sellers. I alternate. My Audible strategy is to read one fiction book and then one nonfiction. So, and sometimes I do science fiction. Sometimes I do novels. Here's a great book if you're into computers. My friend Stephen Levy wrote The History of the Early Computer Revolution, Hackers. It is fantastic. And then if you like that kind of stuff, this one's another great one. The Masters of Doom. Will Wheaton reads it, which is awesome. It's the story of id Software, the creators of Doom, and John Carmack and John Romero. And, oh, it's such a good, good story. The Lennon and McCartney of video games, they call them. And here's another one I read I loved. Console Wars. Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle That Defined a Generation. Look, here's the beauty part. You're going to get your first book free. The only challenge is picking one. You like novels? You like romance? Oh, history? The Girl on the Train? That movie's coming out now. Oh, before you... You know what? This is my absolute advice. Always read the book or listen to the book before you go see the movie. Because the Audible book versions of these books bring it to life. It's like a movie in your mind. It's great. And when you listen to the audio book version, you're going to go, oh, oh. And that way, all the spoilers happen in the best environment possible in your mind. And then you can see the movie. And you can go, boy, it wasn't as good as the book. Which is almost always the case. Audible.com/tech guy. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's a book a month plus the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Cancel any time in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing, but that book will be yours to keep. So that's why, you know, it's good to think about. What's that first book? Make it something fun. Make it something you really want to listen to, because that'll give you the best sense of what listening to an audiobook is like. In the car, at work, on the treadmill. There's nothing more boring than a treadmill, right? When I'm on the treadmill and I'm listening to Audible, it goes by so quickly. Did you see War Dogs yet? Before you see it, the new Jonah Hill movie? Read the book, the original book. I'm telling you, it's great. Audible.com/tech guy. A world of wonderful books awaits. And if it's that magic song, it must be the magic man, Johnny Jett, our world traveler. Hello, Johnny Jett.
How you doing, Leo?
I am great. You're still home. 2 weeks in a row.
I'm still home.
Must have something to do with the fact that the baby is on the way. In a month.
It sure is, and it feels nice. Nice. I think I had my first lazy Saturday. Just
get ready. You're going to be doing
the Olympics on the couch.
Yeah, you're going to be lying. You know, the best thing, and it only lasts for a few weeks, is lying on the couch watching TV with your baby sleeping on your chest. He'll just be on the chest. And that's the best thing ever. But they grow out of that in about a minute. So enjoy it. Hey, Johnny helps us travel better with technology via apps and websites. What do you got for us this week, Johnny?
So you're going to Europe soon, aren't you?
I am, in 1 month.
1 month. So I got an app for you. It's actually a website or an app. I like the website. It's called Go Euro, G-O-E-U-R-O dot. Have you heard of it?
I have not. Go, and I'm going there right now. I'm going to Go Euro.
So a lot of people don't know, you know, to the best get around. So let's say you're going to Paris and you're sick and tired of Paris and you want to go down to Barcelona. So you can type in, you know, you can do Paris to Barcelona, do airport codes CDG to BCN, and it, and the day you're going, and it will tell you what I like about it. It will show you, you know, the your fastest options, the cheapest option, and the, you know, the best option. So also, you know, people don't realize flying could be quick. Also, taking a train is an option, especially between London and Paris. Not so much Barcelona.
I love
and
taking
Paris.
Trains. If I could take a train, I'm taking the train. And look, it's $224 total for two people.
Can you hear me, my internet?
Yeah, your internet's breaking up, Johnny. I guess he can't hear us.
Yeah. You could time warp.
You know what? Hey, it could be worse. You could be on Frontier. Oh, we're losing him. We're losing him. We're losing him. All right, Johnny, I'll tell you what. I think the Skype has failed us. Why don't you call it back on a phone, and we'll get you on the via the phone, okay? Skype usually works pretty well, but sometimes, every once in a while, you get these kind of internet issues. So GoEuro.com, and it's a search, a travel search site, kind of like Orbitz or kind of like Kayak, but he's calling the hotline. Should I pick him up on the hotline? I think that was, I think that was Johnny. Are you there, Johnny?
Yeah, I am. Sorry.
Hey, look at that.
Going on my Wi-Fi.
Sometimes the telephone service just works.
Yeah, well, so the internet doesn't.
This is GoEuro.com. It's kind of like a kayak, but instead of just airplanes, it's trains and buses, too, which I really like. And in Europe,
and
especially.
Cars, so I'll tell you about the rent-a-car. Or,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, and I like the graphic just because it lays it out so simple and lets you show you what your options are between, you know, cities and Paris. In Europe. And, you know, a lot of Americans don't know that, you know, sometimes taking the train could be quicker or sometimes taking the train could be a lot more expensive.
Yeah, it's funny. The fastest is the train, you know. I mean, that's kind of cool.
For sure. Especially between London and Paris.
Yeah.
If that's what you're looking up. I also have a cool little product for you. I don't know if you heard of this one. I was at the dinner recently, and one of my friends said, let's take a selfie. I said, all right. And she turned on her phone case, the Lumi illuminated cell phone case.
Yeah, this is the Kim Kardashian special.
Is that Kim Kardashian? That can't be right.
Yeah.
Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God. All right, forget about that one then.
No. Hey, if you're into selfies, who better than Kim Kardashian to inspire you?
That's true. I didn't realize that was her. That's embarrassing.
I'm pretty sure. Well, no, I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Kim Kardashian is involved in this. But it's Lumee is Lumi, and Lumee.com.
I mean, it was pretty cool because we were in a dark restaurant, and she said, "Let's take a photo." I was like, "It's too dark." She's like, "No, it's not." And she flipped the switch, and boom!
You know,
I was like, "Man, there's a studio in here."
By the way, if you go to the website, you can see the quote from Kim: "I'm obsessed with my Lumi case."
Okay,
this is you know why? It's like a makeup mirror. It's like photographers sometimes use these ring lights around their lens, and it really is actually a good way to illuminate an image.
For sure,
yeah,
but it is a little embarrassing that I'm recommending it.
No, just because Kim Kardashian got there first doesn't mean it's not a good thing. I mean, who better to recommend this than Kim Kardashian?
That is
right.
True.
I mean, she's probably the queen of selfies.
Well, without a doubt.
Johnny, do you have a Lumi?
I do not. I was amazed with it when I was at the dinner, and I was thinking about getting one.
No, we have Megan Maroney, host of our iOS Today show, has one, and it doesn't. You know,
like
it's because it's a very smooth, even light. You know, it's exact. What you don't want is a point source, which is of course what your phone has, is a single point source. The iPhone does something interesting, which is it flashes the screen at top brightness, so it's kind of the same thing. But I think it's cool. It's a case.
I mean,
too.
You can also use it as, you know,
a flashlight
to read the menu at a restaurant as well.
Absolutely.
Besides using the flashlight on your phone, which they all have. But
what are you going to do, Johnny? We live in the age of the selfie.
Yes.
Right?
Well, I've been taking them for a long time, way before Kim Kardashian was even born, probably.
Should I get a selfie stick for my travel?
I used to carry one in my bag, but I used it once or twice. You know, I don't know. They used to be pretty cool, but now you see them, and you know, most museums have banned them. A lot of Disneyland has banned them, all the Disney parks. So I don't know. I say no.
I'm thinking of bringing a selfie quadcopter with me.
That would be cool.
Yeah, because you can get them where you have the little dongle you put on your wristwatch, and it just follows you everywhere. So I'll just, when we begin the day traveling around Copenhagen, for instance, I'll just turn it on, and everywhere I go, it will follow me. What do you think?
I like that. But, you know, with drones, by the way, speaking of, like, little drones, a lot of people have trouble getting drones into countries. So make sure you do your research before, you know, doing it, because I've heard of friends having their drones left at customs. They won't let you in.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes.
Wow. I guess I won't be bringing my drone with me.
Well, just do some research on the countries you're going to and find out. But
can I bring a drone to Russia?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'm taking my chance here. We're going to Russia, Latvia, and Estonia next month. You think it'll be safe?
What's the cruise line you're doing?
Oh, it's a great cruise line. It's Regent Seven Seas.
Okay. I haven't been on that one.
Yeah. I've never been either, but I hear very good things about it. So I'll report back. I'll report back.
Please do. Please do.
Johnny Jett is online at johnnyjett.com. That's his website. And now that he's home a lot, there'll probably be a lot more great deals in his travel newsletter, more pictures of himself, perfectly lit. No. But there is lots of good stuff.
Some good deals right now, by the way. San Francisco to Seoul, $649 on Air Canada via Vancouver.
Wow. Nice.
That's and L.A., I just saw one. L.A. had deals to Asia for $500, less than $500.
See, this is why you want to subscribe. It's free. JohnnyJett.com. Also, follow him on Twitter and Instagram, and you get lots of pictures of himself. Perfectly lit. No, he doesn't. You know what I like about you? You don't do selfies. I am so sick of selfies. Selfies do not.
Well, I do selfies. I just don't use the selfie stick or the Lumi.
I like to take the pictures of the people I'm with and the places I am. I've seen enough of me. Hey, thank you, Johnny. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.
Johnny Jett. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, and Al's in Vista, California. Hi, Al.
Yeah, hi, Leo. My antiviral software is coming up for renewal. I pay, I don't know, 50 or 60 a year. Norton. Are they really necessary?
No. What version of Windows do you run?
It's Windows 7. I didn't update to 10. So I have Windows 7.
Yeah, you know, in 10 now, they bundle Microsoft's own antivirus, and I think that that's adequate for most people. In Windows 7, you have your choice. There is a free version of Microsoft's antivirus, the Security Essentials, they call it, for Windows 7, at Microsoft.com/security_essentials, or you just Google Microsoft Security Essentials. I just use that. It's lighter weight. Norton's had some issues, frankly. Oddly enough, a lot of the third-party antiviruses introduce more security problems than they fix, Norton in particular.
Right?
Yeah.
Do they slow down the computer when you install? Oh, they do.
Yeah. So the other thing that happened with antiviruses is they got in a race for features and became very bloated, and Norton was the worst.
Oh.
Symantec keeps telling me, and actually I think they keep telling me, oh, no, it's this year it's lighter weight than ever, and then every time I try it, it's not. But a lot of that is driven by the market. I mean, we want more features. Remember the good old days? You used to go to a store, and like Staples or a computer store, and you'd look, and there'd be a box with software in the box, and you'd look on the back of the box, and they'd have these tables with all these check marks in it.
Uh-huh.
Well, it really was a war to get the most check boxes, but the problem is, you know, people would buy that because, well, it has more checkboxes than the McAfee, but it was just bloatware. It was added features that weren't necessary. So go with a lightweight Security Essentials. Do not renew Norton.
So if I don't renew, will it uninstall automatically?
No. Yeah. You'll have to uninstall it. In fact, you'll probably want to go to Symantec. They have, and this is true for McAfee too. Remember, it's an antivirus, so they have precautions against malware uninstalling it or disabling it, right? Which makes it harder for you to uninstall. Get the tool from Symantec that's the removal tool, and the Norton removal tool, and that's a better uninstall than the one they use.
My goodness.
Yeah. Isn't that nice?
Thank you. Thank you, Leo.
Yeah. My pleasure. Yeah. What was the Norton exploit? I'm trying to remember. We talked about it on Security Now. High severity. This was June 28th, so this was less than a couple of months ago. High severity bugs in 25 Symantec Norton products imperil millions. Tavis Ormandy, who is a Google researcher, security researcher, said, "These vulnerabilities are as bad as it gets." What? So you, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. I bought a security program that made me less secure? Yes. Multiple critical vulnerabilities, not just in, by the way, the consumer Norton brand, but in the flagship product, the business product, the Symantec Endpoint Protection. Messed up. They all use the same core engine. They all had the same exploits, which would allow a bad guy to access your system unaided. Now, of course, Norton's patched these. Well, I hope. I hope, but doesn't mean there aren't more of these. Why put software on your system that adds vulnerabilities and doesn't protect you from bad guys? That's a bad idea. You don't really need, these days an antivirus is less useful than it used to be because viruses move so fast. You're really mostly interested in your behavior. An antivirus is a backup, but the problem is, you know, it's not going to catch today's zero-day exploit because it's just too fast. So you have to be more careful, not the antivirus. And certainly putting something on your system that opens holes up is terrible. So let's recap. Slows your system down? Check. Adds bloated features you don't need that sometimes even prevent you from getting online? Check. Protects you from antivirus, from viruses, from malware? Not so much. Uncheck. Adds exploits and holes of its own to your system that bad guys can exploit? Check. It's got all the check boxes. I'd say don't buy it. Jimmy in Inglewood, California. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, what's going on, Leo?
Not much. What's up with you?
Hey, I could have gone out and did some cardio waiting online.
I know. We do that to help you stay in shape.
All right, right on. Listen, I just got a Mac last year, MacBook Pro. It's a 2013 version. I got it for $699 at brand new at during the holidays last year. And I also came across an SSD drive, a 256 gig Intel SSD drive, and I want to put it into my MacBook Pro. What would be easier? I've been listening to your show. Should I use Carbonite to make me a copy of my OS?
No, because Carbonite's really just for data. Carbonite really isn't designed and shouldn't be used to back up an operating system. So,
okay.
First of all, I've done this. You can do this. It's a good upgrade. Although if it's this, you know, a recent Mac, it may not be as good an upgrade as if it's on a much older Mac. But it's a good upgrade. I would suggest buying the SSD from a company that I use called Otherworld Computing. They've been a Mac retailer, aftermarket company for decades. They're at MacSales.com, and the reason I recommend it is you'll make sure that it's exactly the right thing you need. Right? Because you want to make sure it fits your Mac. But they also have...
It is a laptop SSD. I got it because my neighbor was getting rid of it. It's brand new in the box.
All right. It may or may not work. Remember, this is Apple.
Okay.
Apple does things different. Think different? Yeah, even inside. So it may or may not work. There are, you can look at videos on how to replace an SSD, and with any luck, it's probably a standard SSD in the Mac, but it's not guaranteed. Remember, they have, you know, every laptop is designed as a unique little snowflake with different design, you know, considerations. They may have trimmed a corner off of, you know, an SSD to get it to fit. Try it anyway. As far as backing up, what you want to do is make an image copy of your existing drive. That's different from a Carbonite copy. Make a local image copy. There's great Mac software for that. Super Duper is fabulous. Also, a Carbon Cloner copy. Both of them will make a bit-for-bit bootable copy of your internal drive. In fact, what I would do is buy an external drive. You plug into your existing Mac, do the Super Duper copy to make a bootable copy of your hard drive, and then boot to it. And make sure it's all working, everything's good. Because now you can open up your Mac, take out the old drive, put in the new drive, boot to the external drive, and run Super Duper and copy the external drive back to the internal drive. This is usually works. If it doesn't, it's not the end of the world, because Apple also has, on modern MacBooks, which yours is, the capability of installing directly off the network. So you can go into recovery mode on any Macintosh, even with an empty drive, this brand new drive, for instance, wipe it and install the current version of OS X, the one that was current when you bought your Mac, in your case, El Capitan. So you're really not going to be out of luck no matter what you do. But do make sure it fits before you put it in. That's why I always go buy it from Otherworld first. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality headgear and all that stuff. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. We can also be reached via Skype if you're outside those countries at 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. That's free, open to all. I invite you to visit and make comments, make suggestions, add content. But every question, every call is there. In fact, audio and video after the fact as well. Techguylabs.com, and just go. Just use it. Please do. We put it there for your use as a resource. A couple of notes from previous calls. Victor, one of our editors here, told me he had an old Samsung Galaxy phone. Remember, we had a caller who had a Note 2, and of course, he doesn't use it as a smartphone anymore, just as a tablet, he said, but it's gotten behind on Android updates. Victor tells me he brought his old Galaxy phone to one of those Samsung kiosks. They have them at Best Buy and Costco and sometimes at the malls, and they will update it directly for you. I didn't know that. He said he did that. That's kind of cool. So that's one way to keep it up to date with official Samsung software. And what else was I going to talk? Oh, I was going to talk about Windows and the anniversary update. Wow, this just in. Microsoft had a public beta, a public test of the anniversary update. I was in it. A lot of people were Windows. They call it the Windows Insider program. And that means millions. I don't know. They don't release the exact number, but I think tens of millions of people used the anniversary update before it was released. And so it's kind of hard to understand why there have been so many problems. The latest, the Windows 10 anniversary update, which, by the way, you can't say no to if you took the free upgrade. You can defer it, but eventually you have to take this upgrade. Breaks most webcams. What? Version 1607. Have you had this happen to you? Breaks webcams that we use, like the Logitech C920 and C930E cameras. The reason, apparently, is... that it stopped playing back video in the format that those cameras use, which are standard formats, MJPEG and H.264. So it's a bug. It's a bug. The current Microsoft version of Windows does not support uncompressed data. Most cameras do compress data, so it breaks most cameras. So if your webcam stopped working, not Microsoft's, of course. No, that's, I used it on a Surface Book, works fine. But if all of a sudden your webcam didn't work, well, that's why. I've had blue screens nonstop ever since the update on my HTC Vive setup, my very expensive virtual reality headgear and specially built computer just for using it. Can't use it. And on and on and on. Apparently, as long as you don't use Microsoft webcams, you're out of luck. No, they'll fix this. There'll be a patch, but it's still extremely frustrating. Extremely frustrating. Ian in London, England. Hello, Ian.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for listening in Great Britain, and thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, I'm a big fan of pretty much the whole Twit network.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I had a quick comment about VPNs, and then I was looking for camera and smartphone recommendations.
Okay.
Right. So my comment about VPNs was you've mentioned a couple of times that you could use a VPN for, say, privacy or security if you didn't want, say, your ISP to be able to collect data on you.
Right.
And my thought was, jump in and correct me if I've got something wrong here, but if you use a VPN, you're just giving all that same information to the VPN provider.
That's true. Absolutely true. You're pushing it down the line.
Yeah. But while the ISP is heavily regulated and based in your own country with your own judicial system, the VPN is not regulated, and you don't really know where they are or whether you can trust them.
That's true.
So it didn't seem to be a good upgrade for security or privacy to me.
Well, remember, in the United States, our ISPs are far from trustworthy. So partly it's informed by that. The reason that this is the case is that if you're going to talk to the public internet, eventually you have to emerge onto the public internet. So all a VPN does is have you emerge somewhere besides where you are right now. So it's said you basically have an encrypted tunnel to someone else. It's true. You have to trust the company you're dealing with. Many ISPs, and this is one thing that we look for in a VPN provider, don't keep logs, or at least they say they don't keep logs. And that's important because that means were they subpoenaed by law enforcement, they'd have no record of you, your presence, or where you went. Now, you're right. That's what they say. You have to trust that they're not lying, that they weren't, in fact, set up by GHQ or something, you know, GCHQ.
Yeah.
So that's always the risk. But all computing is that way.
It's
kind of, I mean, you're trusting whoever, you're trusting somebody as soon as you get on the internet. So you're trusting your software provider, you're trusting your operating system provider, your computer manufacturer. And nowadays, at least in the U.S., we're so paranoid about our federal law enforcement officials overstepping their bounds and spying on everybody that we're very nervous about the whole process. So it's not surprising that somebody might say, well, I'm going to use a VPN that has me not emerge in the United States, but in the Netherlands, that has a Dutch company behind it, because I trust them. And even if I didn't, at least I don't have to worry about the NSA. But that may not be the case. You make an excellent point, Ian. That may not be the case.
Sure. Okay, right. So on to my question, or my request is, I live in, right next to Europe. I've never actually been to Europe for leisure. I've been for business a couple of times, but now at the beginning of October, I'm going to be going to visit a bunch of European cities. So starting out in Munich for Oktoberfest, and then like Salzburg and Prague and so on.
When are you going?
Beginning of October.
Okay, here's a little tip. Oktoberfest is in September. Just a tip.
It continues until the 3rd of October.
Okay, good.
The final days of it.
It was quite a shock when I found that out.
Yeah. No, my boss is German. So check
before you go. So you want to know about phones? Is that what you're interested in? Or?
Well, I want basically a phone, a camera, and an action camera.
Because
my OnePlus One is getting past it. I don't have a good camera for travel. Yeah. And we were hoping, if the weather permits, to try and go skydiving or bungee jumping.
Oh, man.
Camera. Yeah. So, okay, I realize that's a lot. I'm fairly comfortable with the action cameras because I'm a cyclist, and both Garmin and TomTom make action cameras that are also cycle computers, so I'm okay with that.
Nice.
So I've negotiated with the wife, and I think my budget comes down to about £1,200
wow.
for a smartphone and a travel camera.
Oh. Don't want to use the smartphone as the camera?
I've thought about it, but I'd like to go a bit better because if I've got the time to sit down and fiddle with lenses or settings and take a better picture, I'm perfectly comfortable doing that. And I've got a whole month to practice.
Well, certainly so you have £1,200. It means you're probably not going to get a DSLR and a high-end smartphone. A high-end smartphone alone will get you close to your budget limit.
Well, the Galaxy S7 is $500 here.
Is it?
So.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Done. So that is a great phone and a great camera. One of the best displays out there. I've been using that, and then now I just got the Note 7, which is basically a big boy version of the Galaxy S7. That's a great. If that's £500, it leaves you £700. Take a look at the Canon PowerShot cameras. They're excellent cameras. They're point and shoot, but they give you really great optics, and they're well within your price range. That should be a very good choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. So as you could tell, I ran out of time there, Ian.
Yeah.
I had a kind of... So it sounds like, though, if you have £700 left over, you have the budget to do something a little bit better.
Yeah. So I went into a local camera shop in MIT, and in my head, I was just thinking like the Sony RX100, which is very pocketable.
Oh, wonderful camera. But that's well outside your price range, I think.
Not actually. The Mark III is $500 and the Mark IV is $750.
Perfect.
So
those are great cameras. I have the Mark II and I love it.
Yeah. But the thing was, the guy in the shop, the first thing he put in front of me was an Olympus EM10 and an Olympus EM5.
Those have interchangeable lenses. Those are great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What struck me is that they're almost the same size. They're not quite pocketable, but they're close enough. And I realized interchangeable lenses at this form factor, I didn't realize that was possible.
I use the EMF. They're a Micro Four Thirds. I have many of those OMD cameras. They are spectacular. They are absolutely great. Now, you're going to get one lens to start, but as your budget, you know, goes along, you can expand it. Micro Four Thirds has the largest range of lens choices. The only negative is the sensor size is a little smaller than a full frame. But at your price range, if you can afford an OMD, absolutely. Those are excellent cameras. I really like them. Yeah. We use those. I used it until I got my Sonys. I went mirrorless with those. And until I got my Sony, which has a full-frame sensor, that was all I used, and I love it. Andy Inako from our Mac Break Weekly show loves his OMD.
Okay, right.
Those are spectacularly good cameras. And, yeah, you get more flexibility because of Micro Four Thirds.
Okay. So
sounds like you've solved it.
I guess. It's just that what my sort of thing is I could get the EM5 and an F7 and fit budget, or I could get I could get the EM10 and the Galaxy S7 and fit budget, or I could get the EM5, which is a big upgrade, but I'd have to go down to something like a OnePlus 3 or a LG G5, which they're basically as good as phones and computers, but they're not quite as good as cameras.
Yeah, they aren't. You know, the G7, or the S7 rather, is the best camera out there. It's really, really good. However, you're going to have a better camera in your pocket. So, and you know, you like the OnePlus One. The only thing, I love the OnePlus 3, by the way. Excellent. For that price, excellent phone. Not a great camera, not a terrible camera, decent camera. Battery life, not as good as the OnePlus One. You're getting the best battery life now on the market. You'll get a little bit of a decrease in the battery life, but it's as good as, or if maybe even better than the S7.
Okay. Right.
So if you can put up with a lesser camera, it's a better phone. I mean, it's a purer experience of Android for one thing. My misgivings on all of the Samsung phones are the Samsung software.
I've heard.
The OnePlus 3, though, I've been very happy with that. Great camera. Okay. I mean, great phone. mediocre camera.
Sure. Well, that was the trade-off.
I get the better OMD. That's going to be a lifetime investment. 2 years from now, you'll be getting a new phone. You'll be using that OMD for a long time.
That's a fair point. I hadn't thought of that.
And that is a great camera. And because you can add lenses over time, there are some great lenses choices out there for that. Highly recommend it. The M5 is what Lisa has. And she also has a Sony A7 R2, and she frequently goes back to the E5.
Okay.
So highly recommend.
I was hoping to fit it in because it's weatherproof.
Yeah, get the OnePlus 3. Get the OnePlus 3. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great phone. You know, in many ways, it's a more pure Android experience than the S7 for sure. All right?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Murris in Coronado. Oh, I love Coronado, just down there. Hi, Murris.
Hi.
Am I saying your name right?
Nura.
Mura?
Nuris, N-U-R-I-S.
N. All right, Nuris. Hi, Nuris.
Yeah. Hi.
What can I do for you?
I was wondering what your take was on the Uverse company, because we have them for internet service. However, their speeds of internet is very horrible.
One problem is that you're sharing your TV and your internet on the same lines. So if you're watching Uverse TV, your Uverse internet slows down.
Yeah, they have DirecTV as a TV.
Oh, okay.
Service.
Okay, so you're using the satellite TV, so that wouldn't affect it. You know, it's funny because normally Uverse should be pretty consistent in its speed because it's but not so, huh?
No, they've had to replace modems 8 times.
That's terrible. So they take the blame, huh? They say it's their problem, huh?
Yeah, they've had to send texts. Some say it's the line, and they've had a lot of runaround issues. It's crazy.
Well, and I also have some sympathy for DSL providers. So they're using your own phone, your internal phone lines?
No, we're using
The reason I'm confused is Uverse has two ways of working. They have a fiber optic system that's available in some areas, but in most areas, Uverse is using the copper phone lines that were there from the phone system before. And I don't know which you have.
Yeah, we don't use the phone line system. We use the other one, fiber optic version.
Oh, okay. Well, then that really should be very fast and very consistent. So it could be your in-wall wiring, but it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like there's something going on with their own physical plant, probably even outside the house. So I don't know what the answer is except to keep calling them until they make it right.
Yeah, that's what we had to do. And some said if the issue continues, it might be outside lining. So.
Yeah, well, fix it, AT&T. Fix it. Right?
Yeah. They give a lot of excuses, but they don't fix anything.
Yeah, eight modems. It's time for them to start looking outside. It's outside, you know, because it's whatever box is connected to the fiber to convert it to copper to put it in your house or something like that. It's out there, not in your house, and it's not your modem. After eight modems, they should know that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't have a fix for you except to just don't give up. Just keep saying, hey, dudes. And maybe you should mention to them, you're on your eighth modem. You think maybe it's not the modem? Maybe? Eight modems? Why would they keep doing that? That's, you know, I think what here is my guess. Maybe you're getting a kind of a lazy tech. Because, you know, they got the modem in the truck. And they go, we'll just fix the modem. It's probably just the modem. Because he doesn't want to go up on the pole. He doesn't want to open that box outside. He doesn't want to go out there. That's hard work. Maybe say, hey, maybe call, ask, can I talk to a supervisor there? Dude, you're wasting your own, they're wasting money. There's no point in putting in another modem. It's not the modem. But because the tech doesn't want to go out on the pole, he said, I'll just give you a new modem. That should fix it. See you, bye. See you later. I'm sure it's better now, right? Goodbye. So maybe it's time to talk to a supervisor and say, hey, can you please fix this? And it's not, you know, it's not in their interest to keep replacing the modem. That's expensive. Unless they're just giving it to your neighbor, the old one. That's remarkable. I know there's nothing I can do to help, but wow. Matthew, Louisville, Kentucky. Hello, Matthew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You.
Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Dad. Hi, Leo.
How you doing?
Good.
Do you play Little League in Louisville?
No.
Because you have to use a Louisville slugger, right? If you play Little League in Louisville.
I've seen their game. I've seen the Bats games before.
Have you seen that giant bat?
No.
They have a giant bat in front of the Louisville Slugger plant. I got one. They put my name on it. I went to the factory. They put my name on it. But they said, don't ever use this because it'll crack. Because we put your name on it. So it's just a decorative bat.
Yeah. And I had a question for you.
Sure. Go ahead.
How do you install plugins on a Minecraft server?
Ah, are you running a Minecraft server?
Well, yeah, it's a home server.
Nice. So, which server are you using? Are you using the one from Mojang, or are you using Spigot or Bucket?
I think we're just using a Mojang server.
Okay. So you have to use the plugins that work with that server. Generally, the way you do it, and I, by the way, the only server I've run is the Spigot server. So, but I think it's the same for the Mojang server, is that you have a plugin folder in the folder where your server is, and you download the plugins and you put them in that folder. And okay. Different plugins may have different instructions. For instance, sometimes you might have to edit a configuration file, things like that. But in most cases, you just put the plugin in the plugin folder. And restart, you know, you have to start and restart the server, and then it should see it. What plugin do you want to put in?
Like World Edit or something like
that.
Yeah,
that's cool. Don't put in Herobrine, though. Oh, man. I put in the Herobrine plugin, and you can't get rid of him. In fact, mm-hmm. I took out the plugin, and he's still there.
Wow.
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll be going down a ladder, and I'll see him down there. And then I'll get down there, and he'll set me on fire, or there's signs all over saying, no.
I've seen a couple of videos on him.
Yeah, scary, man. There's some good plugins. So, did you figure out how to do this all by yourself?
Well, I had a little help from my dad, but I came up with the idea of trying to get a server like a year ago.
Isn't that awesome? I know. I put off my son for a long time. He said, come on, I want a server. Come on. Finally, I did it, and I'm glad I did because it's cool. Plugins really can add a lot to the capabilities. My suggestion at some point is to move to the Spigot server, which is more – they keep up to date. It's free. It's easy to install and build. It's not much more difficult than the Mojang server, and it has a lot of plugins and a lot of capabilities. So if you're going to run a Minecraft server, I really like the Spigot server.
Okay, thanks. Right.
Hey, have fun. Do you do survival or creative? What do you like to do?
It's going to be like a building server. It's nice. Going to be creative.
And you're going to have your friends visit and play with you?
Yeah.
That's so cool. That'll be so much fun. Have a great time.
Okay, thanks.
Don't tell him, but he's learning how to run a computer. This kid's going to go places because he's learning skills that will be useful in the future. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by the great folks at Blue Apron. I really love Blue Apron because they're near and dear to my heart. Blue Apron, listen to their mission statement. And they do this. I mean, they really do this. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. And they do all of the above. So let me explain what Blue Apron is. Blue Apron delivers to your door a refrigerated box with fresh ingredients, fish, meat, chicken, the most delicious fresh produce, herbs, spices, everything you need to make a meal. And it's a specific meal because you also get a recipe card for that meal. Each box has three meals, and it can be either three meals for two people or three meals for your larger family. They have both couples plans and family plans. And then you get there, you get home, you pick your day, by the way, you pick your meals too. They have a very nice menu selection. And you get home. Now, even though it's, you know, it's 5:30, you just got home from work, in 45 minutes, you're going to be putting the most amazing meal on the table for your loved ones, for your family, for your honey. The house is going to smell wonderful, and you're going to feel really great. And I can tell you, this is true because it's my experience directly, that you made this. You're going to say, oh, yeah, I made this. Yeah. You don't have to tell them it came from Blue Apron, although they probably will know. And that's, they're not going to complain. You might say, well, yeah, but I can't afford Blue Apron. Let me tell you this. Grocery stores cost 60% more than Blue Apron. That surprised me. It's less than $10 a meal for everything. And the reason is they don't have a big store. They don't have clerks. They eliminate a lot of the overhead. They're selling directly from these great farms and fisheries and ranchers to you. So you're saving money. I want you to go to blueapron.com/twit and take a look. Fresh ingredients from local farms. The beef is raised humanely. The seafood is sourced sustainably. The chickens are free range. The pork is raised naturally. All the stuff you would buy for your family. Regenerative farming practices for the produce. And there's no waste. Because if you need four asparagus spears, that's what you get. You need two, what are those? They're fairy tale eggplants. You need two fairy tale eggplants, that's what you get. Not more, not less. They have all the information you need to cook, including videos on their website, interactive pages. Let's look at the menu. It's always fun to see what's on the menu this week, and it's different every week. See, they have a two-person plan and a family plan. And the family plan has stuff kids like too, like summer vegetable quiche with radish, cherry tomato, romaine salad, pesto, meatball, and mozzarella paninis with zucchini slaw, stuff that's the kids are going to love. The two-person plan, a little more sophisticated, but always delicious. And don't be scared away. I mean, eggplants, shishito, and summer bean stir-fry with jasmine rice and ginger lime cashews. You might say, whoa, but you know what? This is the best meal you ever had. And once you cook it and you see how delicious that is, and the smell in the house, seared salmon and miso soba noodle salad with fairy tale eggplant and baby greens. I got to tell you, this is great stuff. You don't have to take my word for it, though. You can get your first three meals free, and that includes free shipping. They deliver to 99% of the continental United States. Go to blueapron.com/twit. You know what? There's not a commitment. You can do it as long as you want to. Just try the first box and just see. I'm telling you, this is your new hobby. And since we all have to eat, why not go Blue Apron, right? blueapron.com/twit. I think you're going to love this. And get the kids involved. It's fantastic. We thank them so much for their support for this week in tech, all our shows, and, of course, the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number on the line. Next, let's see who's been waiting the longest. Oh, it's Ed in Levittown, PA. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Leo.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
They got me.
Uh-oh.
Microsoft, I did the anniversary install.
Uh-oh, what happened?
I back up my hard drive to a external
smart
hard drive. I use something called second copy.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, after I did the install, external drive doesn't show up anymore. But if I go into device managers,
that's what I was going to suggest. You could still see it.
Yeah, it's there.
Is it? Can you when you're in your device manager, you should be able to see if it's partitioned and formatted. Is it? Does it say it's an NTFS drive?
Well, I'm right here. I can take...
Yeah, and if it is, then you should be able to mount it. You can actually manually mount it in the drive manager. And then you should be able to see it.
But when I click on the icon, it says remove device.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. It's a USB drive.
Yes. Anyways, I downloaded the original Maxtor stuff, and then went to Seagate, and I uploaded a disk. Let's see, what's that called?
First of all, the first thing I'd try is connecting that, if you can, that USB drive to a different computer, just to see.
I did that.
And you can see it.
Yeah, but that's Windows 7 on the other computer.
That's fine. I mean, I just want to make sure that the drive itself didn't break. You can see it.
Yeah, I can copy
it. It's all normal. It's all fine. Okay, so something went wrong with Windows.
Well, anyway, my question is there a generic? Because Seagate doesn't have a drive.
There's no driver. A USB drive is generic. It's a USB storage driver. So
yeah.
It's called the mass storage driver. And USB's funny. I mean, it's built into the operating system. You can remove it and restart Windows and reinstall it. It could be that's what's wrong. It sounds like there's something different wrong. I know that is very, very strange.
Well, the other strange thing is I'm using this because back in April, my Carbonate stopped working when I went to an SSD hard drive.
Oh, well, that's a different problem that probably is worth pursuing. But although I do think it's a good idea to have a local backup as well as a cloud backup, just because it's, you know, it's there, it's faster. The cloud backup is like belt and suspenders. It's like in case there's a fire or something really bad, then you have a backup in the cloud.
Right.
So I'm not against having an external drive. It's weird that the Windows update broke your USB drive. That seems like such a simple, simple thing. Is there drive? Did you leave the drive software?
In there, I see them all.
Say again?
My other thumb drives, if I put them in USB, I see everything except the Maxtor.
Huh. So, and you tried a different USB port on your computer?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, somebody's pointing out you said device manager. We're not talking about device manager. I was thinking you meant disk management. You want to look in the disk manager. You know how to do that?
Yes.
Windows key X. You want to look at the partition manager, basically. That's what their disk management utility is. See if that drive is visible there. And if it thinks it's partitioned and formatted. Other USB devices continue to work? Just that
yes.
one. Just that one.
Everything else works except for that Maxtor.
Oh, that's so weird. Is the Maxtor software still on the drive?
No, I took it off because I thought there
yeah, who needs
some
it?
Sort of a conflict.
Yeah, who needs it? Well, you can always download another copy of it, maybe run it again in case there's some sort of strange thing Maxtor is doing.
Yeah.
To delete the way to fix the USB, or at least try to, is delete it from the device manager, USB mass storage, and then let it plug and play back. But I don't think that's what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong. Let's let the chat room see if we can figure it out. It's not something that the anniversary update should break, but I'm hearing so many things that did break that it doesn't really surprise me.
Okay, I'm looking at the disk, and it says it's unallocated.
Yeah, that means... Okay. So it sees the physical disk, but it doesn't think it's partitioned. That sounds like a driver issue. Because on Windows 7, it looked fine.
Yeah. Like so, I said, I see all the files on my other desktop computer, but not
yeah,
on my laptop.
Yeah. Okay, so this is interesting. So when you open the storage manager, you're seeing your C drive. You're seeing this other drive. It sees it physically, but it says that the drive is unallocated. That means it doesn't see the partitioning on there. That, you know, of course it's not going to, then it can't read it because it's not partitioned, except it is partitioned. So...
Should I repartition this with the other computer?
No, I wouldn't, because you'll delete all your data.
That's true, yeah.
I would download the Maxtor software. Maybe Maxtor is doing something odd. Get the software from Maxtor, rerun it. Maybe they're doing something weird. You know, modern disk drives lie. They're lying liars because, honestly, the geometry that the operating system expects is completely different from the actual physical geometry. So the drive lies to the operating system. Oh, yeah, I got cylinders. Yeah, I got a, yeah, no, my sectors aren't that big. No, no. And then it does the translation in its software and its circuitry. So it may be that you do need the Mac Store software on there to convince Windows 10 there's something on that drive. So go to Mac Store, get the latest version of the software for that drive and install it again. I bet you that'll fix it.
Okay.
All right.
We'll give it a shot.
Yeah, don't use any other manufacturers. Use theirs. It probably has to do with the way the drive misrepresents its physical status. And there may be some translation software in there or something like that. Drives lie. All modern drives lie. That's just their job. 8888 Ask Leo. Wow, that's a weird problem. That must be some special software that Mac Store used was clobbered by the anniversary update. Perhaps because it was incompatible, perhaps because Windows didn't know about it. That's got to be it. Robert, Clovis, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I'm going to borrow a phrase from the caller before me. They got me.
They got you too?
My Apple ID has been hacked.
Oh, man.
It's really weird because at 5:07 Tuesday morning, I got an email from Apple saying that my shipping address and credit card was changed. Then a minute.
By the way, that's why they send you that email.
Yeah.
So you'll go, wait, no.
Right. But a minute later, they changed my date of birth. A minute later, they changed my security questions and answers.
Wow.
A minute later, they changed my password. Then they changed my rescue email. And a minute later, they changed my Apple ID and my email address.
And then you stopped getting emails.
Right. Well, I called Apple right away at 7:30. So what happened?
Well, they somehow got into your iCloud. So they either guessed your password or they got it some other way.
Right.
Is it a good password?
No, it's an old one, probably from an old account I don't use anymore.
So here's the most common way people will get your password. One, you reuse it. So if you use that password on 50 accounts or something similar, and they were able to break into one of those other accounts, then they say, oh, well, let's see if this works anywhere else. So that's why you always want different passwords for every login. If your password is your initials and your birth date, that's not a good password. The best password is, of course, not memorable. Because it's a scramble of letters, numbers, and symbols. And it's long. But if it's monkey123, maybe they guessed it.
Yeah. And I mean, that's cool. I get it. I teach a security class. It just happened.
Oh, well, you know. You're going to have to start using yourself as an example. The other way that people can sometimes, and I think Apple's plugged most of the holes here, is with social engineering.
Right.
So that's how Matt Honan, my buddy Matt Honan, who's a tech writer, got hacked. Because the bad guys called Apple, they called Amazon, they got a little information from each, and they were able to get into his Twitter account using that. We believe that's also how those movie stars' pictures got leaked from social engineering. So you got to watch out for that. But Apple's pretty good about that today. They've fixed a lot of those holes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on just a sec. Don't go away. So the other thing is they do offer two-factor, and if you teach a security class, you know you should probably turn that on.
Right, and I'll be doing that. The problem now is Apple, since Tuesday, has been trying to decide whether they want to believe I'm who I say I am.
Right, of course. Of course.
All my media, my movies, my songs, my apps have been purchased on the old iCloud account.
Right. You'll get it back. I mean, are they asking for proof of your identity? Yeah.
Yes, and proof of purchase for the.
You want them to be slow. You don't want them. This is that whole. Okay, this is the social engineering hole. You're actually seeing the other side now, where you could used to be able to call up Apple, say, "Yeah, I forgot my password." Okay, what's the last four of your social? 4791. Okay, here it is. We give you a new password. They don't do that anymore for that reason.
Right.
You want them to make you jump through a lot of hoops because otherwise there's a social engineering flaw. This is great for your class.
I know it is. I'm wondering which one of my students did it, or I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always a question mark how you lost the password, but there are those. I gave you the most common avenues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I was at the Brick House about 3 years ago.
Oh.
Now that you're moving, I have a reason to go visit you again. So
please
I'll
do.
Out there.
Please do, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Hey, well, thanks for your time, Leo.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, that's horrible when that happens. It's a terrible feeling, isn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and with me, the Giz Whiz, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and my good friend. It's great to see you again, Dickie D.
Yes, sir. How are you? You all set to the move and everything?
Oh, yeah. I haven't mentioned it today. I wanted to surprise people. We haven't yet moved. We are in the old studio, but tomorrow's show will be the last show from our brick studios. Then we're moving on up to the East Side Studios.
Nice.
Yeah.
And no, I've been watching the progress.
Yeah, they're making, you know, it's funny, and I think this is kind of always that way. It seemed like nothing was happening for weeks, and then all of a sudden, in the last 24 hours, it's like, it really,
yeah.
You know, but Sunday we start broadcasting from there. Our podcasts start broadcasting tomorrow night. And then,
yeah, no, it's great that you have the drop cams up because about a week ago I said, hey, John, your studio, your building's the other side of the street. don't tell Leo, But they covered nicely.
you're joking, but in fact, I always pull into the parking lot across the street. I keep forgetting that we're on the left, not on the right. Because it's in a less quaint area of town. It's, you know, kind of an office park area, and all the buildings look exactly the same. So you're making a joke, but it's actually kind of the case. It's easy to get lost.
Well, that's all right, because I heard you say there's an IHOP nearby, and that works
right
for me.
We're
that
trying to decide if we should have our staff meetings at the IHOP. I think we're going to.
Okay.
From now on. Pancakes on me.
Ooh.
Well, they're cheap. no maple syrup, just the pancake.
Oh, just pancakes. Yeah.
What it usually, Dick, brings us a gadget or a gizmo. What
yeah, I do. I have a fun gadget I saw at a press event. It's from eBags, and it's their new professional slim laptop backpack.
You know, I buy all my luggage from eBags. It's so funny.
Well,
Leo,
you will love this. It's kind of designed for the business person who wants to actually take a backpack to the office, but not have it look like a backpack. So there's no chains. There's no mesh water bottle. There's a water bottle carrier, but it zips closed when you're not carrying a water bottle, and it folds into the bag. And then
is it one of these? Because this is the one I have.
You know what, Leo? I think you have it. That's it.
I bought this. I love it.
Yes, except they make it, and you bought gray. They make it in black.
Yeah, and blue.
So, you know about the AC garage at the bottom.
Yes, that's why I bought it. You could put your laptop adapter in this special pouch at the bottom.
Yeah, and it's a pouch that's hard-sided so that nothing from inside the bag pushes down on it.
Yeah.
And also, they told me if you want to carry a projector or something huge, that AC garage pulls out, and then the bag folds down from the inside.
Oh, I didn't know
that. It makes a huge compartment. But already, I guess you know that the laptop thing can take a 17-inch laptop.
Yeah,
a 17-inch laptop. You might as well put your tower in there.
I know. I know. And I'm not carrying that around. They're big, but you know, I walk to work, so I needed something that I could carry my work stuff in. And this, I love this bag.
It's very cleverly worked out. I don't know if you even noticed, but when you close all three zippers, they line up so that one padlock can lock all three compartments.
Oh, very clever.
Yeah, they did a lot of neat things with it. And also, do you know about the pass-through?
No.
Leo, I didn't even know about it. I said, what are you talking about? The pass-through is either vertically or horizontally. There's a pass-through so that if you want to take this and slide it down your luggage, the handle of your luggage goes through the middle of the bag. There's a tunnel there, so that it's now part of your rolling bag and you don't have to worry about it falling off.
Oh, I love that. Actually, I did know about that.
There
I always do that. And I have the same bag below there. That's the eBags, like, hard-sided luggage. I have a yellow one and a red one. I usually use the yellow. She uses the red, so we know which. Because you don't want black, because then they can't see it on the luggage carousel. And then I love this when I'm rolling into the airport, I just slide my bag through
yes.
there.
Yes, and the pass-through works vertically and horizontally. There's a pass-through in each direction.
What a coinkydink, because I just bought that.
That is
bag.
A riot. That is so funny.
$100, right? Something like that.
Yeah, $109. And one of the few times I tell people to go to ebags.com, because every time I stop there, some kind of weird discount comes up.
Yeah, they're having a lot of sales. Yeah,
a lot of sales. A lot of times it says 20% off anything. So, yeah, it's $109 there. So it would be under $100.
I can't remember. I think I found them on a Facebook ad or something, and I saw that backpack, and I said, wow, that looks – it's exactly what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Excellent. So
isn't that funny?
Excellent.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. I use their luggage because it's inexpensive, and frankly, luggage gets
trashed. It's well made.
It's effective, and I used to buy fancier bags, but it doesn't matter. All luggage gets trashed after, 10 flights. Nothing's left. So might as well get a cheap bag, because it's not going to, those fancy bags aren't going to last any longer than the cheap ones do.
Yeah.
So very nice. Dickie D, you'll find information about this and all of the gizmos and gadgets he talks about, not just here, but on ABC and elsewhere, including his podcast, at gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.biz. Don't forget to play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine by correctly identifying a close-up picture of a gadget, or incorrectly identifying it, but doing it with style.
Yes.
It's all about style. Style points.
It's all
count.
About style.
Yeah. And we'll see you back here next week, Dick. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
It'll be in the brand new studio, and it will look exactly the same.
Okay.
We're taking everything. Thank you, Dick. See you later.
Have a safe move.
Thank
Bye.
You. Yeah, moving is no fun, as you know. Actually, you probably don't know. It looks like Dick's never, ever left Gizneyland. You've been there. You couldn't move.
No, I've been here like 35 years.
You couldn't move.
No, I could not move.
Don't ever move, Dick.
That is the plan. That is the plan. Yeah.
And let your dogs figure out what to do after you pass. They'll find a good home for all your gadgets and gizmos. Thank you, Dickie D. That's what I always worry about. We had a 10,000 square foot basement, and it was too easy for the last 5 years not to make any decision about stuff, but just to stick it in the basement. Which means that at some point you've just either got to pack it and bring it, or make a decision. And this time we made a decision. We got rid of most of that stuff. Found good homes for all of the kind of interesting old computers and things. We had Amigas, we had Osborne's, we had Macintosh computers going back 20 years. We got good homes for all of them, don't worry. Hey, thanks so much to Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thanks also to Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, for holding down the fort. And, this would be a good show for me to make a kind of a special thanks to all of our studio engineers and technicians who work so hard behind the scenes, not just Nathan Staten and Sherman Oaks, but up here in Petaluma, John Slonina, my studio manager, Burke McQuinn. He's our tech. He repairs everything. He's amazing. Takara, who's on the board right now, and Alex Gumpel. And got to always thank our IT guru, Russell Tammany, who works harder than anybody. And he's not even an employee. He's a contract employee. He has his own IT firm, Exponentia Systems, up in Santa Rosa. Thanks to all of them for keeping us on the air. And, of course, Bill Hickey, our chief engineer down in Sherman Oaks, keeping us on the air, keeping the words flowing. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.